For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Hey, it's time to gather around the water cooler to talk the SNL Hall of Fame.
All right, so here I am, Joe Gannon, in the SNL Hall of Fame. I am heading to the lunchroom. JD is on assignment. Oh, I don't know what the assignment is, but anyway, either way, we're in the lunchroom, and I'm drinking from my Stanley Cup. Not that Stanley Cup, the hockey one. And I'm joined with my partner, Shari.
Hi, Joe. I've got my
How you doing?
I've got my water. I've got my water bottle, and I'm glugging away.
Yes, and we have a great one. Great episode. This is the musical guest episode. And that musical guest is Aerosmith, one of the greatest bands of all time. They have been on the show 3 times, and Shari, can you give us the recap?
I sure can. It was a great episode. It was the fabulous Bill Kenny, chief conversationalist, with, what's this? Not one, but 2 chief conversationalists. That's right, Thomas Sano was back in the Hall of Fame. Worlds were colliding. It was fantastic. And these 2 super knowledgeable gentlemen took us through a journey with Aerosmith from their very first moments until their very last on SNL. They got us through all 4 episodes. They talked about the famous sketch, which we'll go into in detail, and how they even said live from New York in the cold open. They went through all their song performances and so much more. It was a fantastic episode. Definitely one to watch. Don't you agree, Joe?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, each of these episodes that Aerosmith was in, this is how you know that they're a great SNL band. Not the SNL band that plays in the intro, but a great band, a great musical guest, I guess, phrase. Because not only, like you said it already, we'll get into it, but, you know, they said live from New York, but what I'm getting in at is all 3 people that hosted when they were the musical guest, those are great episodes. It's like the host is great. Well, I'll just say it right now. The hosts were Tom Hanks, Mike Myers, and Jeff Goldblum. Great hosts. So it's like the host part is amazing because those, and then, you know, the musical guest is also amazing. So it's like, if you could get your hands on those episodes, the Tom Hanks, Jeff Goldblum, Mike Myers ones, from head to toe, just solid. I mean, and that's rare for Saturday Night Live. And I'm sure even those episodes have weak points, but even those weak points will probably be better than most strong points in, you know, the other years. So I'm just saying it, like, Aerosmith held their end of the bargain. You know, carried their part of the show. They, as they said in the other podcast, they didn't always do the hits. So they even went on a limb and did, like, whatever you want to call them, B-sides or deep tracks or whatever you want to call them. But even still, they still rocked. And I always have a soft spot for when the musical guest is in sketches. So, all right. Yeah, so tell me what you think, Shari.
Oh, I think Aerosmith is terrific, and I think they're very unique. I couldn't think of anybody currently in the Hall of Fame that compares to them, Joe, but we've talked time and again about how there aren't a lot of musical guests in the Hall of Fame. I think there's only Paul Simon. And he really, I can't think of any way to compare the two of them except that they're both musical artists. I think Aerosmith is heads and shoulders above Paul Simon, but Paul Simon has had this consistent, all the way up to the anniversary special, which we'll talk about on another day, this consistency that Aerosmith hasn't had. So can you think of it? There's not another musical act in the Hall of Fame currently that compares to them, is there?
I don't really think so. And by the way, yeah, Steven Tyler is head and shoulders above Paul Simon. I mean, physically. But to me, Paul Simon is the musical representative for Saturday Night Live. And I was trying to, when I was doing my notes, I was like, trying to think, has there been a band that's been there since the 70s? Maybe the Rolling Stones. But if not Paul Simon, if not the Rolling Stones or Mick Jagger, then maybe, I mean, but definitely Aerosmith. I mean, just their sound sounds like every era that Saturday Night Live has been a part of. And as far as anyone similar that's already in the hall, now you said no real musical guests. So I just kind of chose like Tom Hanks or maybe Christopher Walken because they kind of, you know, or like Alec, maybe not Alec Baldwin, but like just, I was thinking in terms of someone that joined, like became a part of the Saturday Night family, kind of a third of the way or halfway through, kind of in the late 80s, you know, and they popped up time and time again, and stuff like that. Like, so maybe more Walken because, you know, Walken kind of stopped showing up around 2000 or so. So I, just in terms of whoever's in the hall, I was thinking like, yeah, someone that, you know, joined or became a part of the family late in the game. You know, not there from the beginning, not there in the early 80s, but kind of late in the game. And it popped up time and time again, you know, just because they're so awesome. And that's why I thought Christopher Walken or Tom Hanks. But again, it's, you know, not really. But that's because there's not any other musical guests in it. So maybe there could be the Paul Simon wing and, you know, they can hang in there with Mick Jagger and Aerosmith.
Yeah, that's excellent thinking. I wasn't even thinking about other hosts, but that was a good way of going at it because Tom Hanks and Walken are such a fabric of the show, but Walken's a little more like Aerosmith, like you said, because Tom Hanks, again, is like Paul Simon. He's been with the show. He was in the anniversary special, which we'll talk about, like I said, a later time. Mm-hmm. So I think Walken was an excellent choice. Now I'm going to continue on that trajectory and talk about those on the ballot that compare. Joe, we've talked so much about this. I don't think there's many musical guests even on the ballot. They don't make that 10%. So they keep falling off. So I couldn't quite remember who was still on, but I know ones that have fallen off. Taylor Swift, I think. Aerosmith is similar to. I said Dave Grohl. I think Dave Grohl's the most liked. Because Aerosmith genuinely loves being on SNL. So does Dave Grohl.
Mm-hmm.
Dave Grohl has such a good time. He's always in sketches. So I see that band, because I couldn't think of another band that compared to them. I said U2, but U2 never appears in sketches. So Aerosmith is kind of a unicorn, because they're one of the bands that appears as a whole band in a sketch. And I can't think of too many other bands that have done it. I think somebody said maybe Skid Row had, but I can't think of too many bands that have. But I do think they're similar to like Dave Grohl, to Timberlake, to Taylor Swift, and that they're so good when they're on, both as a musical guest and appearing in sketches. They've never done double duty. But still, yeah, I think for me, that's who I see that's on the ballot or has fallen off the ballot. But that was on the ballot at some point. Can you think of a band or another artist that's on the ballot or was on the ballot that compares to them?
I'm gonna say no. Dave Grohl is the closest. And now it's worth mentioning that Dave Grohl really plays characters in sketches where Steven Tyler, you know, usually you know, plays as himself. Like there's the Michael Jordan retirement video, Wayne's World. Another one that I wanted to mention is, because I'm a big David Spade fan, is Carl's Video. This was the Jeff Goldblum one, and the joke in it is it's a small video store. This is back in the early 90s when there was video stores, and it wasn't just Blockbuster or Hollywood Video. There was even small mom and pop chains that were just, you know, a small room, like almost like, I don't know, 30 by 30. Anyway, the point is, that's what the video store was, and David Spade played a video clerk that was always over the customer's shoulder, and he would go, all right, good runtime, good cinematography. And then the joke was, Jeff Goldblum plays a customer who comes in, and he's asking about the adult videos, and it's like, in the back, you know, good runtime, good cinematography, and the guy's still recommending good adult videos. And then, just as Jeff Goldblum's character's leaving, Steven Tyler comes in, and he barely gets the question out. He goes, where are, and then Jeff Goldblum goes, oh, in the back. Oh, okay, you know, and that's the, you know, joke. But I just wanted to give Carl's Video a shout-out. And then Mary Catherine Gallagher, he was in that. He played someone looking for a dancer in his video. And now here's what's awesome about that is Mary Catherine Gallagher was an established character sketch. And at the time, Aerosmith was doing this, what I call the Alicia Silverstone trilogy, where she was playing kind of like a high school or a Catholic schoolgirl rebellious thing. So it kind of made sense that, hey, I'm looking for dancers. And then in comes Mary Catherine Gallagher, just total reality meets Saturday Night Live sketch perfectly. So when he was doing his tenure, you know, in the late 80s and early 90s of, you know, being on Saturday Night Live, it just fit in. It made sense for him to be in Wayne's World. It made sense for him to be in the Mary Catherine Gallagher sketch. And then the Carl's Video. Oh, and then it made sense for the Michael Jordan one where he's playing himself. And then the Carl's Video is more of a cameo, but still it's like an unexpected cameo. And I believe he was already in the show already, so you kind of don't expect him to show up twice. But yeah, I felt like when he was doing his, you know, and he could, you know, when he was doing his tours and, then, you know, he was promoting his albums and, you know, or not his, the band was promoting their tours and their band. Anyway, it made sense to be on Saturday Night Live and then to take it one step further to be in those sketches. It just it didn't stand out. Like, it would be weird if he was in a Pat sketch or Stuart Smalley. So I feel like when people are thinking of what is a good SNL musical guest, aside from Paul Simon, yeah, Aerosmith. So.
Excellent. Yeah, excellent.
You know, my two.
Yeah. Great job, Joe. Great job bringing up some of those sketches that Thomas and Bill didn't even mention. So excellent job hitting on those. I know Thomas and Bill just talked a lot about how they always had a song. They always played the hits, like you said, but they also played lesser known songs, and that they were one of the rare bands that did a live from New York at Saturday Night Live. And not many bands have done that. Mm-hmm. Bill and Thomas mentioned that. And just their song choices, as I said, were always on point. And like you said, Joe, they had such good hosts. Three of the four. The fourth host was Julia Stiles. Not quite as top-notch as the other three.
You got me.
Not quite as top-notch as the other three. I had to go digging through my notes for that. But, yeah, they were a lot of fun. Of course, we have to talk, before we end with the final plea from Thomas and our responses to it, we have to talk about their iconic appearance on one of the most famous recurring sketches of all time, Wayne's World. I mean, Joe, come on. That's in every clip show ever. Right?
I mean, as well it should be. I like what they said. Like when they were singing the Wayne's World theme, like you didn't know that there was a second verse. And I was thinking, like, they do that all the time with like the Cheers theme song and stuff like that. So to have one of the greatest bands ever to sing the theme song to one of the greatest sketches ever, this is a I want to, you know, save this for this point, because they were even mentioning, this is another great point that they made, was does it break the grounded reality of Wayne's World? Now, and then they even said it would be kind of weird or missed opportunity if they didn't do this. I kind of feel like it makes the Wayne's World, the, you know, fictional show and all that stuff, all that much cooler that they got their winning lottery ticket and finally got to interview Aerosmith. And then, you know, and obviously Aerosmith had to sing. It would be, you know, please don't make me sing. Anyway, Kristen Wiig. But, and then they have, and then I also like the added detail of Dana Carvey playing drums.
Yeah,
which,
yeah.
I mean, that is just interweaving Wayne's World into Aerosmith. Aerosmith means the, and it's just, and yeah, so this is where the musical guest, I mean, there, and there's nothing wrong with the musical guest showing up and just being the musical guest. There's, and also there's nothing wrong with them not hosting and da-da-da-da-da, but this is where both segments of the show collide. You know, the only other way to make it more SNL is if Weekend Update became a part of it somehow. If, like, Dennis Miller showed up to introduce him or something. But this is where the musical guests and the sketches just collide in a perfect, like, I almost want to say harmony. It's perfectly woven. It's in the reality of the sketch. They don't just show up and at the end, you know, like Linda, like Barbara Streisand or something. It makes sense for him to be there. You know, Tom Hanks is playing the roadie, and yeah. So it is just like where everything is in perfect harmony, and I don't even know what else to say other than like great and amazing and, you know, at that point. So what'd you
yes.
think?
Yes. Oh, I've already said it, but you already said it. Great. Amazing. Memorable. Going to live 50 years from now. We're still going to see that. Okay. So now we get to the final plea from Thomas.
So here it is. You know, you're sitting on the other side of the table here.
Oh man, you're gonna make me do that.
Yes, the most stressful part of the show. Make your final case, Thomas, for Aerosmith in the SNL Hall of Fame.
All right, so first and foremost, I think the elephant in the room is that musical guests just have a tough time here at the SNL Hall of Fame. So that's, you know, get that out of the way, that, like, you know, more power to Godspeed Aerosmith as far as your Hall of Fame candidacy here being a musical guest. But I think, you know, as I mentioned up top, it's just like there's very few musical artists that many people feel that are so synonymous with SNL and synonymous with like a famous sketch, Wayne's World, the movie Wayne's World. So right away, they're just like tethered to something that's like an institution at SNL, which is an institution in and of itself. And then you have, you know, they were on. SNL got them at Pump, which was like the validation of their careers. They got them at Get a Grip, which was one of like the biggest albums of that era, honestly, from around that time. They went on SNL and promoted for four albums in a row. They used SNL as a stop. And Aerosmith just loved Bill. They loved being on the show. You could tell that they loved SNL. We just talked about how giddy they were when they were on Wayne's World. They were wanting to play for that Michael Jordan song, right? So they love the show. It seems like they get the show. They want to be involved in some of the comedy. And to me, when we're looking at musical guests, I think that's important. Like that's like some of the X factors there is beyond the music. How are you associated with the show? And Aerosmith's associated with the show beyond the music. And by the way, the songs rocked, the music rocked, they gave us what we wanted, they did old songs, they did new songs. Aerosmith, just when they were on SNL, they loved the show, and they just gave the people what they wanted.
I agree, and if there is an SNL musical, like an official SNL musical guest, aside from Paul Simon, I mean, But it needs to be like Aerosmith, because, like I said, Aerosmith has covered so many, has been there since the 70s. So it's, and then even the sets, I don't know how to describe them, but like even the sets feel like places Aerosmith would play, like, you know, that one with the big fan in the background, or something that looks like the, you know, New York subway terminal. It just feels like it, like, because SNL bands are like underground, where you hear them for the first time or something. Or they just did, you know, and not that Aerosmith, like, you're hearing them for the first time, like they would be performing there for the first time, but this might be the first time you're hearing Aerosmith as like a teenager or something. So, so yeah, they're like the perfect SNL musical guest, because they've been there in multiple eras and been a part of one of the most iconic sketches. So.
Oh.
I agree.
We both 100% agree with Thomas's final plea. Now I'm going to switch gears, and we're going to do our Hall of Fame, Hall of Shame. And of course, there's not an episode this week, and we're not going to talk about the anniversary, because we've got to save that for our buddy JD to chime in on. But we will talk.
As much as we both want to. I know we're both bubbling. We've still got SNL anniversary hangovers.
Oh, yeah,
but
for sure.
We'll get there. Trust us.
But until then, we're going to talk really quickly, because we got a lot to talk about. We're just going to do our Hall of Fames and Hall of Shames of the documentaries. And, oh, SNL gave us so much great content, didn't they, Joe? Wow. So much great content.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. Okay, well, let's get it rolling. I want to start with the first, I don't know that it, I think the documentaries might have dropped a bit before the four that dropped on Peacock, but we're going to start with the one that was actually on NBC. And we talk about how the musical guests just never get enough credit. Well, Questlove delivered with the musical documentary, ladies and gentlemen, 50 years of SNL music. Dropped a couple weeks ago, 3 hours of awesomeness. Wouldn't you agree, Joe?
Okay, so yes, I mean, for one, yes. I mean, that's the short answer, and we all know I don't give short answers. But here's the one thing I got to say about it. I mean, I recommend obviously watching the whole thing. If you're an SNL fan, or even just even a little bit, or if you want to just learn about Saturday Night Live, obviously, I recommend watching the whole thing. But with that set aside, what I also recommend is just watching that first couple minutes of the remixing of some, not all, but most of the musical guests that have played in the last 50 years. They do this great remix. And I forget who it starts with. I forget who it starts with. Like Gwen Stefani. But my favorite was, and this is where I was just, I lost my mind, and I didn't even, it wasn't even at the end. It's where they started with the Under Pressure, Queen's Under Pressure, and you got that familiar beat. I'm just bum 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 da dum bum 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 bum. And you're thinking like, oh well, naturally they're gonna remix this with Ice Ice Baby. That is the most obvious, you know, similarity. That's the most obvious, that's the one, that's another song you think of. Or when you hear that bum 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 ba da dum bum, even when I'm humming it, I'm sure you don't know which song I'm humming. I mean, that's just how it's been ever since Ice Ice Baby came out. But in this remix, before Ice Ice Baby, it goes bum 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 bum. Then Dave Matthews Band, and then Vanilla Ice, and then She Drives Me Crazy, and it just goes on. And then mixing If I Could Turn Back Time to Bop. I mean, it takes you into places where, you know, you're in the 90s, you're in the 70s, you're in the modern age, and it just bounces, 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 and it's not just the, you know, music itself, but visually they do these, you know, these breaking the windows things where they have all the multiple artists on screen, and I'm telling you, like, I like listening to that. Like, I think that would be a great TikTok video or YouTube video on its own.
I totally agree.
And I really hope, and maybe, and the last, I mean, I just, like, it'd be so cool. I know there are multiple artists with multiple labels and all this stuff with musical rights, but it would be so cool just to make that a music video on its own somehow. And, you know, because it is, it gets you pumping. It really does, and it is a great, maybe as perfect as it gets for an intro for this documentary. So that, and I want to say my favorite part was the beginning, but it got me pumped and ready to go.
So that was your Hall of Fame moment. And
that was what, I mean, yes.
Yeah, I had that at the top of my Hall of Fame moments too. I just love, you already said it, Joe, in the opening and then all throughout the documentary, acts from every era. And it was filled with little nuggets, like the talk about the Funky Four plus one more. I think I'm screwing up their name, but the first hip hop act ever on TV. I mean, amazing. Mm-hmm. And so many others, you know, the Fear with the slam dancing. Just one thing after another. We could talk all day about this, but I'm going to go to our Hall of Shame moment for the music documentary. It was pretty hard to find one for me, Joe. Could you find one?
Mm-hmm.
You found a Hall of Shame.
Oh, damn. No, because I was hoping like I could, you know, piggyback off yours or something. But because to me, all right, it's a documentary. It's like, you know, finding a flaw in the dictionary or something, or Wikipedia, or, you know, like there. I mean, maybe there's a sketch or two that's missing, and I'm, you know, or like a musical sketch that's missing, but. I mean, the thing is 3 hours. So, I mean, they covered, if they missed something, I mean, fine. I'm fine with it. But, I mean, it's hard to, you know, find a flaw in a documentary. As we move on, I'll probably will repeat that. But, yeah, I didn't really find a flaw in the Ladies and Gentlemen documentary.
Me either. It was as close to flawless as you get. So let's move on to the four on Peacock, and I'm going to start with the audition, and I'm going to give my Hall of Fame, and then I'm interested to hear yours, Joe, because it took me a while because there were so many good moments, and I thought the audition process, it's so fascinating, but I just loved, you know what I'm going to say, you know how much I love him, Joe. Bobby Monahan, the guy I want to have.
Oh, yeah, okay.
He, at the very end, he's crying. He loves that show.
Yes, yes, yes.
He loves that show with his whole soul. And that got me. The whole thing got me. I love, this was my favorite of the four. But the whole thing just got me. But Bobby crying and talking about how much the show meant to him is my Hall of Fame moment. How about yours?
I mean, okay, I didn't know we were going to do pros and cons for each documentary, but for the auditions, seeing Bobby Moynihan break down and seeing, here's the thing, is I don't want to say I've been watching them, but like I've seen those auditions on the SNL DVDs, like back when they started releasing them, like in early 2000s. So I would say that my pro is seeing the reactions to the documentaries. You know what I'm saying? Like, cause I've, you know, like they did it, you know, like they did the audition and then I've seen the audition. Now I'm seeing the reaction to the audition, you know? So it is a total pro to see. And then plus, another pro is seeing a bunch of auditions, including people that didn't get the show.
Yes.
Like Jim Carrey and Kevin Hart. You know, like that's worth seeing because it's like saying, because that to me is inspirational where it's like, hey, you could be totally amazing. You could be one of the greatest entertainers of your decade, but because you didn't get Saturday Night Live doesn't mean anything. Like Jim Carrey, he didn't get Saturday Night Live, but then he got into Living Color and then the movies and Man on the Moon. And, you know, I mean, so it's like, so what? You didn't get, you know, you didn't make the, you know, you could come back and host. Doesn't mean you can't host because you didn't get the audition or didn't pass the audition. So it's worth seeing, you know, the successful SNL auditions as well as the ones that didn't make it. So it was a very informative and very inspirational documentary.
Agreed. Let's keep it moving. We're doing great. Let's talk about the Writer's Room documentary. Another super interesting look because Well, I didn't ask about the Hall of Shame for the auditions. Did you have anything, Joe?
Yeah, I mean, again, because how about this? What I'm probably going to say about all of these is it's hard to say a negative for a documentary. Like, you know, like I said, it's hard to pick. So, but for that one, no, I mean, like, you got the information that you wanted to get out of it, you know, and stuff like that. You got to learn all about the process. And I even like how they even said, once you get hired, that's not it. You know, like, that's, it's not over. You're like, you're still kind of auditioning once you get on the show.
Absolutely.
So, but yeah, let's move on to the writing.
Yeah, I'll say I had a very minor quibble. I just wish we'd seen a few more older cast members. But, you know, you get who you get.
Yeah.
And there were still plenty. So, yeah, let's move on to the writers. And do you want to give your Hall of Fame or your favorite moment?
Hall of Fame is I like how they showed the process. And now this documentary to me is a different flavor as the James Franco documentary, which I think is out there somewhere, I think on YouTube. Basically, what James Franco does is he shows the making of an SNL episode. It's the John Malkovich episode when Malkovich hosted in the early 2000s when he was promoting the movie Red. Anyway, and then James Franco was hosting the next week, and he was like, screw it, I'll just show up a week earlier and make a documentary, which is awesome. But anyway, within that documentary, you see the writing process, and to me, I'm not comparing, they're apples and oranges, but like the James Franco one, you see how the writing works with the production, works with rehearsal, all the way to dress rehearsal, and all the way to the final. You kind of see how it's the sausage is made from A to Z. Now, I'm not saying that is a plus or minus compared to this one, but this one, it focuses more on just the writing. But what I will say is that's both a plus and a negative. Because you're focusing on just the writing. It's like saying that, like, when you're seeing the sausage get made, you're focusing on it just getting packaged or you're something like that or getting sliced or something. You're focusing on one specific part, which is obviously what the documentary is supposed to do, but then you kind of want to see it, you know, like, okay, now what? You know, like, so I feel like if you want to, it's kind of like, hey, kids, if you want to learn more about SNL, visit your local library. But if you want to see, if you see this documentary and you want to learn more, go to the James Franco one. It's called Live from New York. And I write, yeah, so that, I'm just saying that that's what it reminded me of.
I have not seen the James Franco.
So what'd you think?
I have seen the James Franco one.
Oh.
I'll definitely have to check it out. I have issues with James Franco these days, mm-hmm. but I'll put that aside.
A lot of women do.
And I'll check it out. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to reiterate everything you said, Joe, because you said it so well. I loved the process. I loved the peek behind the curtain. It was the IO Debris episode. My favorite part of that peek, I love the beginning, where they're just pitching ideas like wildfire. These people mm-hmm. are genius. They're just pitching ideas one after another. And it was fascinating to me how they're just throwing them back and forth. And, of course, I also love them rolling in and out on chairs and laughing hysterically. And it's like, it's just a nonstop mm-hmm. party. They're there till 3 a.m. It was really fascinating. I agree with that completely. Definitely the best part of that one. And as far as the Hall of Shame, I had a tiny nitpick that I would have loved to have seen some older writers. But they did the best. They did
what
they could with whoever wanted to do it, I'm sure. So are we ready to move on to the mm-hmm. Cowbell documentary?
Yes.
Are we
yes.
ready for Cowbell?
Okay. So, okay. I'll start with the pros. Now, what I like is there's another thing because I was rewatching it, and there was a detail I didn't catch the first time, which is they had Daryl Hammond as the announcer, which worked because he was the announcer in the fake, you know, where VH1 documentary. So it's kind of like, you know, like he was a reoccurring character. And then I also liked how they did a fake documentary where they had the drummer from, I think it's Metallica, the one that looks like Will Ferrell. You know, and they had him play the character Will Ferrell was playing. At first, I thought it was Will Ferrell playing the character again, but no, it's the drummer from, yell at your, phones and devices all you want. I'm sure I'm going to hear you in some weird space-time continuum loop, like the movie Frequency. But, forgive me for not knowing what band he's in, but anyway, the drummer, played Will Ferrell's character, and they had Daryl Hammond playing the announcer, and I just thought it was, I had this written down as a con, it's not really a con, it's just more of a note I wrote, which is, I tried to figure out why that sketch, and it's nothing against it, I'm not saying anything negative, but I'm trying to figure out of all of the one-off SNL sketches that they could have done, why that one? And I guess it's because it's more current. Like, it happened kind of halfway through in SNL's history. Like, it's not more current, the last 12 years. It's more current in the last 25. It's certainly rememberable. It gave us a catchphrase, even though it was a one-and-done sketch. I thought it was a fun... And even if you are... I would need four. If you don't want to watch all four, I feel like this is the one saying... You should watch. You don't necessarily have to watch it first. I kind of recommend watching auditions, writing, to kind of see the process of A to Z. But if you only are to watch one out of the four, I recommend this one. It's just fun how they get into it, how they interview not even just people at SNL. They interview Blue Oyster Cult and even Blue Oyster Cult's managers. They get in there deep, elbow deep. To talk about the song itself. So and then as far as a con, it's not even a con. It's just why this one? What makes but I don't know, what do you think, Shari?
Yeah, that's a good point, Joe. I had that same thought, but I really think it's because of how the casual fan even knows Cowbell. It's one of those sketches that everybody knows across the board. And I know there's a few of those, but it sort of stands on its own in that way. And yes, everything you said, absolutely true. I feel the same way. My Hall of Fame moments, I had a few of them, but I think, because you already talked about Will Ferrell and how it was great hearing from him, and he talked about it with such love. Mm-hmm. I like the variety also, besides Will's love and just the things he remembered. I really enjoyed hearing from him. But the variety of people that they interviewed, I love that they had members of Blue Oyster Cult. I love that they had the freaking cowbell manufacturers who manufactured the cowbell.
Yeah.
I mean, those little details were beautiful. And let's just breeze on by the shame. I had just a minor quibble. I wish Walken had been on. But that's not their fault.
But when you find out why he's not, then it's almost kind of funny. When you find out that he doesn't want to because he's trying to distance himself from the sketch, he's like, yeah, I did it, and then let's move on. And then they show a clip from Conan O'Brien's podcast, so they kind of got an interview out of him, one way or another. But it's, because I was watching it, and I'm like, why isn't he? They got literally everyone in the universe except him, and then when you find out it's because he's kind of done with it, I'm like, I laughed. I actually thought it was kind of funny. Oh, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. I get why he wasn't on. He's this very serious actor who's done these amazing movies, who's gotten all kinds of accolades and awards and on and on. And what do people scream at him on the street? More cowbell. So I get it.
Yeah.
But still, it would have been awfully cool to get 2 minutes from him about it. All right.
Yeah.
Understandable. Let's move on to the final documentary and then wrap this baby up. The Weird Year. Season 11. Yep. Season 11. A strange season that I watched live, I'm sure, but I don't really remember a lot of because I was pretty young. What did you think for your Hall of Fame? What was your favorite Hall of Fame moment from this interesting documentary?
I liked that they bookended it or told it through this prism, whatever you want to say, as like a Twilight Zone type episode. It wasn't just like a straight or documentary. They got, and then it was kind of weird having Kevin Nealon host it. Nothing against him, but he just wasn't a part of that year. So it's kind of weird. And he was great. Don't get me wrong. It was just an odd choice. And then, to tell it in this black and white, weird, serious tone. And, but it's another story worth telling. Now, to me, I brought this up multiple times on the podcast. Another weird year is season 95, the 20th year. That's where you still had Sandler, Farley, Mike Myers, Kevin Nealon. But you also had Michael McKean, Chris Elliott, Janine Garofalo. But the reason I bring that up is it kind of says, SNL, just because you have talented people, like in 85, you had Robert Downey Jr., Anthony Michael Hall, Randy Quaid, Joan Cusack. You have all these talented people. You got talented writers, Robert Smigel. It doesn't necessarily mean, it's a winning lottery. Like, it doesn't mean it's a for sure thing that it's going to be a great show. Everything needs to gel together. The fact that they said, hey, now that you're a cast member, who do you work well with? And Lovitz brought Phil Hartman, and Dana Carvey brought Kevin Nealon. And then you got this weird buddy thing where everything works together because they work well off each other. This documentary proves that if you don't have that, you don't have a good show. Because for kids today to see that Iron Man was a cast member, sure, he could host, and he has since then, and most likely he'll probably host again, but he was a cast member, before he was famous. And then same thing with the John Hughes people, Randy Quaid, Anthony Michael Hall. These are people that were famous at the time who probably should have been hosted. But it is worth showing, and then on top of that, they had weird episodes, the Francis Ford Coppola episode, and the way that they ended the last sketch of the season. So it's like they took risks, they tried new things, and it's kind of interesting to see it not pay off. So it shows that Saturday Night Live isn't necessarily this bulletproof show. It can be harmed if it's not treated properly. I mean, even this is Lauren's first year back. You can't even say this is Dick Ebersol's thing or whatever, or another producer. No, Lauren came back. He was basically rebooting the show, and it didn't work out at first. And then, eventually he got it right. So it is a great idea for a documentary. The only con I had was the tone, but I thought it was an interesting tone. So I'm not saying it was bad, just, okay, that's a way to go about it. Especially since you're calling it the weird year. I really, and again, it's a documentary, so it's kind of hard to, pick a flaw with it, but yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I totally agree. This was fascinating. I went back and watched as many of the episodes as I could on Peacock. There's 9 minutes of some of them, but it was pretty fascinating to go back and actually watch the season. Mm-hmm. The only tiny quibble, and again, it's not their fault, it's the celebrity's fault. Come on, Robert Downey Jr. Couldn't you give him 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Couldn't you give him 5 minutes? I know you're a big fancy star, but come on. That's my only quibble. Otherwise, I thought it was great. I thought all mm-hmm. four, I think both of us did, all four documentaries, stellar. Get yourself Peacock mm-hmm. for 1 month. That's what I did. I paid for 1 month. I watched all four documentaries,
mm-hmm.
and they were well worth the $8. So do yourself a favor. If you're an SNL diehard fan like we are, spend the money and definitely, definitely, definitely check out those documentaries. Okay, Joe. So this brings
yes.
us to the end, and it has been a pleasure. We miss you, JD, but we had a ball, and we'll see you all next week. And I'm really excited about this one, Joe. Because there is
yes.
a hometown nominee and a hometown
oh,
and
yeah.
a hometown guest nominating. the nominee.
This is how I'll tease it. This is how I'll tease it. Second City, 9 years, one SNL movie. So I'm not sure. Should we say who it is? Or?
Yes, I think we shouldn't leave people hanging. It is Mr. Tim Meadows.
The ladies' man.
The ladies' man. And he is going to be being discussed. He's from my home state of Michigan, and I believe he still lives here. He's going to be being discussed by another Michigan native, the great Victoria Franzo, who I've had the pleasure of chatting with and meeting in person. And she will, of course, be joining our chief conversationalist, Mr. Bill Kinney, next week. So please join them Monday, and JD and Matt Ardill, for the SNL Hall of Fame. And then, of course, we'll see you on Friday to break it all down, just like we did today, and to talk about the anniversary special, which we are super excited about. So until then, from Shari and Joe and JD, who can't be with us, but he's with us in spirit, stay thirsty.
Thanks for listening to the SNL Hall of Fame Water Cooler. To connect with Joe and Shari, join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/SNLHOF. To email the cast, write to snlhofwc@gmail.com. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review the show wherever you get your podcasts. Tuvra. Podcasts and such.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.